Welcome to A Christian and a Buddhist Walk into a Bar. My name is Jamal and I'm a Buddhist.
My name is Jacob. I'm a Christian. I'm a Zen Christian today, I've decided.
You're a Zen Christian. What does a Zen Christian
mean? It means I'm relaxed and absurdist.
Okay, good. Yeah, very good.
Which basically is, I'm a little bit tired today, folks. We'll see how we go. I'm not saying all Zens are tired all the time. I'm just saying I've become more relaxed and absurdist.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that that all Zens would say everyone is tired all the time. So,
you know, oh, well, there we go. Yeah, that's fine then. Especially when they're awake.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're already halfway to enlightenment. I mean, that goes with your pointy hat, right?
Pointy hat?
The pointy hat you're wearing today.
I'm not the seventh son of a seventh son, so I've got no idea what you're talking about.
Ah, see, I hear I was. I thought you were wearing a bishop's hat, and I
mitre, I think it's called, like the soccer ball brand.
A bishop wearing a soccer ball on their head.
Exactly right.
Yeah, this is the quality content you all have come to know and love from Christian Buddhist Bar.
And we haven't even got to the joke yet.
Just you wait. Today we're going to go on a bit of a ramble. Jacob, you mentioned to me just before we clicked go that you had recently appointed a bishop, and I was like, well, let's talk about that.
Well, not me personally, but I got together with a bunch of people who did. We had a bishop. Now we're getting a new one.
Yeah.
Open and closed.
What happened to the old bishop?
He was retiring. He's going to South Australia to be near the grandkids.
Okay.
Which is fine. So he can do that.
A bishop's allowed to retire? It's not a full life?
Well, it depends on kind of which church you are and what kind of bishop you have. I don't know about the Catholic Church, actually. Definitely it's a closer to a full life thing in the Catholic Church, although we had a Pope retire recently. So, but yeah, in the Lutheran Church, which is the church I'm a part of, a bishop will serve for initially 3 or 4 years, and then you have to keep voting them in.
That feels like a really short time for a bishop.
Well, generally they go longer. So, like, the whole denomination, the Lutheran Church in Australia, has existed for a bit over 50 years, and we're now on the fifth bishop. We're not chewing through them that quickly.
The bishop is of all of Australia?
Well, the one that we just elected was New South Wales and the ACT. So there's bishops and bishops and the rest of us. And even that is doing it a disservice. There's this big thing in the Lutheran Church where it's like a pastor is a pastor is a pastor. And so the bishop is just a pastor who has a particular job. Like they kind of can but kind of can't just tell all the other pastors what to do. They're there to serve and care for and whatever the pastors, but there's not a hierarchical thing where the bishop says jump and you say how high.
So there's not a hierarchical thing, except that they're higher in the hierarchy than the other ones.
Well, it's kind of like a first amongst equals
principle. Yeah. Okay. A hierarchy not in name but in practice.
Well, and not even that much in practice. So, like, in the Anglican Church, where I understand it's a little bit more of a hierarchy in practice, it's like the bishop tells the pastor, okay, you're going here now, and the pastor goes, oh, okay. Whereas that's not how it happens in the tradition I'm part of.
Yeah, okay. So,
and definitely in the Catholic Church, there's a little bit more hierarchical stuff that goes on.
But you have to elect a bishop.
We do, yes.
And who gets to elect this bishop?
The synod, which is a fancy church. It's basically the church AGM.
Right. And is that everybody who's a member of the church can come to that?
It's everybody. I mean, even if you're not a member of the church, you could probably come for it. I'll tell you when the next one's on, and you can register as a visitor.
I absolutely want to go and vote for a bishop.
The next one in 2 years' time, where we won't be voting for a bishop, because we only just elected the new guy.
I only want to go if I can vote for a bishop.
Well, four years' time, you can come along. Well, you can't vote for a bishop if you just rocked up as a visitor.
Right.
It's like an AGM, right? If you've got to be a shareholder in a company to vote for the board of directors.
But I guess my point is a member any person who attends a Lutheran church or?
No, the congregations will send a delegate to the synod, and that's based on the size of the congregation. You can have, in this case, 1, 2, or 3 delegates, and most congregations send one person and all the pastors.
So it's like an American electoral college kind of system.
No, representative democracy kind of system. If you think of the synod as parliament, congregations usually vote on their delegates, and based on whoever kind of puts their hand up, and if multiple people put their hand up, they'll pick one of them.
But how do you pick your delegate if multiple people put your hand up?
Well, voting usually.
Voting, all right.
Like so, it's a pretty fairly democratic system.
Does the delegate have to vote for the bishop? We're now getting into deep into Lutheran politics.
I know. I didn't realize this is where we were going.
Does the delegate have to vote for the bishop that the congregation tells them to vote for?
No, it's kind of if you think of a Burkean form of representative democracy for all of those political science educated listeners out there, which is basically he's famous for saying. He was a British politician in like the 18th century and is famous for saying that the electorate, the people who voted for me, elected me to do what was best for them and to represent their interests in Parliament and not to do what they thought they wanted.
Right.
That was his basic take. So the idea is that you send a delegate to Synod and then the delegate hears all the different things that happen at Synod,
right.
And kind of makes up. You pick someone you trust to make up their mind
yeah.
in the process. Which so seeing as we're knee deep, we've lost the entire audience now. We're knee deep in Lutheran politics. The candidates for bishop weren't published until the first day of the Synod, because the candidates for bishop come from amongst the pastors. So the pastors do a bit of voting first.
The pastor's like the ruling party, where they pre-select who's going to run.
A little bit, which to be fair, does... Well, so two things. how did we get here anyway? It kind of makes sense because the bishop is the pastor of the pastors, sure. essentially. So if all the pastors hate the bishop, it's not going to end well.
But you have to have the party room.
Yeah, exactly right. But if, again, in this case here, if... the synod don't like any of the options that have come forward from the pastors, the synod can do a majority vote to say, no, we don't like all of them. We'd like this other person. And that has happened.
And so is that like a...
I don't know how it ended.
Like a majority, like 51% can do that?
Yeah. Right, simple
okay.
majority.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Yep.
All right. So then is there like campaigning? Like are there multiple bishops proposed by the pastors or the pastors all stitch it up beforehand or...
No, there can be multiple bishops proposed by the pastors. So in the US, there's campaigning. And actually in the you can Google the last election of an archbishop for the Anglican Diocese of Sydney. And you'll see like they both had the two main candidates, there might have been others, but like both had websites and endorsements from prominent Sydney Anglicans and that kind of thing. Going on and saying, here's my vision for the diocese and so on. That happens in Lutheran churches in America as well. And not so much here.
Now, sorry.
Yeah.
I have to, I just looked at this. I have to, we may have to pivot this entire podcast.
8 minutes in, that's okay.
From 2021, 9th of May, Anglicans elect migrant former Buddhist person of colour as Archbishop of Sydney.
Oh, did you not know this? Yeah, he's a West Australian Sri Lankan.
Kanisha Raphael.
Yeah.
Was a Buddhist? Yeah, I guess he's not still a Buddhist.
of all of the Anglican dioceses in Australia, I think the Sydney Anglicans are the least likely to elect a current Buddhist as bishop.
But Archbishop Raphael was a Buddhist and I guess from Sri Lanka and is now the Archbishop of Sydney.
Yeah,
I guess there's hope for me yet.
No, there's hope for everybody, Jamal.
Oh, I really want to. Archbishop,
you've
Raphael,
got totally
if you are listening to this podcast, please come on. We want to hear about your intersections of Christianity and Buddhism.
We might see if we can find a biography or something. We can do an episode or get someone on to. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, but in the Lutheran Church, there's not a lot of contestation for the position.
No, like there might be multiple options. And I think it's not been unheard of to get people up to just speak for a minute or two or answer questions or something.
Is there a thing where like the bishops like need to like pretend they don't want the job or something? Or is it all like, no, I want to be the bishop?
Well, there's kind of a bit of both, right? Like, it's not the whole dragging the speaker to the chair thing that happens in Commonwealth parliaments. There are definitely some people who want the job and there's some people who are nominated and will go like, well, yep, I've been nominated. I'm happy to let that nomination stand and let the people decide what they want, which is probably partly why there's not much campaigning involved. That's probably also partly because certainly amongst like most of the pastors know the other pastors So you know people by reputation, even if you haven't personally had too much to do with them. So you've got a bit of a feel for what you think they might be like.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of more about, well, as much about service as it is about leadership and anything else. There's not really a political program of the Lutheran Church. So far as I'm aware.
Like I'm on a reform agenda here and I can, you know. I mean, does the bishop have the power to like push through reforms?
Not by themselves.
Right.
So again, the bishop kind of, it's a first amongst equals thing. They guide a conversation. Sure. That would be the best way to put it, I think. Like right. there's not a heap of, there's day-to-day running of things at that level. But for anything big and contentious, you've got to take it back to a synod where, again, all the congregations and pastors get together and they vote on whether they think it's a good idea, good direction, good way to spend money, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. I think, you know, maybe it's the Catholic influence of my what I know about Christianity, but I certainly conceptually think of bishops as a much more hierarchical kind of position.
Well, they used to be called, until, I don't know, about 2012 or so, they used to be called presidents in the Lutheran system, which probably describes the system more. We should have started with that. Like if you're familiar with some kind of vaguely presidential electoral type system, that probably describes it better. But they liked the word bishop because that's got more pastoral connotations.
Are they the commander-in-chief of God's army? Or?
Sure. Why not? Let's go with it. Michael the Archangel will move over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, interesting. So, all right, how do you – so I guess, you know, if you are allowed to share this information, like can you talk me through what happened in the recent election and like how – what the – yeah, I guess as an illustration of what the process is like and how it goes and all that.
Yeah, so the process was that the current bishop, it was – he was quite clear last synod, hey – I'm only going to do one more, want to retire and be near the grandkids and all the rest of it. So we knew it was coming. There was an invitation put forward for people to submit names. This was for pastors to nominate people who they thought would be a good bishop. Those names were then circulated amongst the pastors of the people who had accepted that nomination. So obviously, maybe not obviously, but there's a whole lot more people get nominated than actually say, yep, I'm happy for my name to get put forward. Then the pastors get together in the week before
so
the synod.
In this case, how many people had accepted nominations? Was it more than one? Was it one person there? Or was there more people who accepted nominations? Or
I don't know if it's ever been. Actually, no, I take that back. It has definitely been one on at least one occasion I'm aware of. But yeah. There's a number of names put forward. I would have thought that like a dozen would be ridiculous.
Sure.
But usually I would have thought somewhere between like 3 and 6 or seven or something like that. And there's voting that happens amongst the pastors.
And you have a little leaflet, which is a leaflet on your pew with one Pastor John.
No, nothing like that. The Pastor John was actually the previous. Anyway, so that's done until you're left with people, like you do a preferential thing.
Okay.
Until you're left with people that have at least the support of 25% of the pastors.
Right. Okay. So it's kind of
it's someone that enough pastors are happy enough with.
Okay. So everyone will get nominated. All the pastors will do a round of voting. You'll eliminate anybody who your preferential system until you get to a point where everyone remaining has at least 25%.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah. Yep. And then those are the names that go forward to the synod.
Right.
And the synod votes, again, a preferential system until you've got, you know, just like an Australian election where you've got someone above 50% of the vote.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was one name came forward from the pastors' conference. And so the synod had the opportunity to go, no, we don't like this. We want another person, but they didn't. And so it was a pretty straightforward thing once you actually got to
the
capping.
And there's no cap. Because in the pastors' conference, only one person got above 25% of the vote.
Yeah, like, of the however many there were. Yeah.
Well, but in the preferential system, though, like couldn't, I guess if that person got all the second preferences as well as anyone who voted for anybody else.
Well, it implies that they got north of 75%.
Right, yeah. So it's clear, right, yeah. All right, and so then one person comes out, And the synod votes, and then in this case, the synod went, "Yeah, we're fine with this person." Did they actually like do a ceremonial? We are voting for this person. Or they just like
they did, yeah, no, they did, yep. And then they asked anyone against, and one goofball put up their thing against, like for a laugh.
It was
someone from this pastor's congregation who was like, "No, don't go."
All right, so they were pretty unanimous. Are you allowed to like let us know who is the new bishop of...
Oh, it's on Facebook, yeah. So Richard Schwades is the new bishop of the Lutheran Church New South Wales and ACT.
Yeah, okay.
He's a pastor in Sydney.
Very good.
Yeah.
Interesting. And was, like, I don't know, has... That seems like a pretty orderly process where everyone's kind of on the same page. Like,
yeah, it was. It was nice.
Like what happens when... Have you ever been around when people haven't been on the same page? Like, what happens there?
I've been around synods where things have been discussed, where people haven't been on the same page, and it's fighting words at 50 paces, right? I know of a bishop election that happened a while ago where the vote was tied. And so then...
Is it tied in the pastor's conference or in the
synod? No, so there were two candidates in the synod.
Yeah.
And the vote was tied between them. I think it's true that each of them voted for the other person.
Right, okay. it wasn't a super acrimonious tie.
No, they got on quite well. So there was a tie and then they did... I don't know if they did something, but then they had another vote and then that vote wasn't a tie because two people had switched, apparently.
Those bishops. They
switched. Yeah, I know, right?
If you were the losing bishop out of that tie, at some point you have to think, like, man, I played that prisoner's dilemma really, really wrong, right? Like, you know, I know the right thing to do would be to vote for the other guy, but actually I should have just screwed him and voted for myself.
I think that's an exercise of trust in God, right? Like, right. It's a... let me put it this way. I think that probably the people who have really strong ambitions to be bishops do not necessarily make the best bishops. Mm. That's probably a fair way to put it.
Of course, people who seek power are the people we want least.
Well, and this is kind of like, you know, a religious tradition that is all about the giving up of power and serving of others, right?
Does God get the casting vote? Is that high?
If you can propose a mechanism for this.
You stand outside until one of them gets struck by lightning.
Something that I've heard, at least a theory of, I think the trial by water or something like that in the 16th century or whatever, to tell if somebody was telling the truth or not.
Is it where they drown witches and then you can't win because either you drown and you're innocent or you float
not,
and you're
not that one. It was something like... You put your hand in boiling water and if you're telling the truth, your hand will come out fine. And the theory that most historians have about that is that priests, being generally regarded as good judges of character, would know how hot to put the water or not based on how truthful they thought somebody was being.
Oh, so it was like a lie detector test where you're just lying, you're bullshitting to the person you're trying to catch out the whole time.
Yeah, basically. It's a like, and if I think you're bullshitting, that you better believe that water's going to be boiling when you're trying. Right. And like all of these things, right? It's a if you genuinely believe that, like, if you know, I'm assuming you know that if you've lied, right, and you stick your hand in, like, you're going to know, well, that's going to burn me because I know what happened. Like, I imagine there's a fair bit of that going on. But we don't do that.
Have you seen any of the, I think it was a spate of television shows in the past 10 years around, like, you know, particularly Catholic politics and that kind of stuff. Like, have you seen any, like, there was like Young Pope, or there was like another Pope one or something? I haven't got into any of those.
Real life church politics is enough church politics for me without binging on. Actually, I would quite like to watch Prosper, but that's another story.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Richard Roxburgh. But the I guess, like, it sounds very orderly, right? I'm sure you're telling this as somebody who is, you know, of this denomination.
Well, and it was pretty, it was pretty uncontroversial, right? Yeah. Like, there was no heated debates about anything.
I guess I'm trying to work out,
this time around.
Is, you know, is the Lutheran Church ever going to get a docuseries about that fateful election of a bishop that, you know, was scandalous and, you know?
I honestly, I don't know my church history well enough to say that, like, there may well be something, some skeletons buried somewhere,
right.
But I couldn't tell you. There's definitely been scandals and things that have happened, and, like, you know, the Lutheran Church has its fair share of historic child abuse claims against it and all the rest of it. So it's like, it's not like, oh, look, everything's perfect. But certainly at the moment, it's on those kind of big things, with the exception of a big discussion we're having about some theological stuff around can women be pastors or not, which we've addressed in this podcast previously, and
the answer is yes.
Correct.
The answer is yes.
So that gets a little bit feisty, but apart from that, I think everyone's all kind of in the same boat, mostly pulling in the same direction with a couple of loose cannons.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Does Jesus take the wheel of that boat?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Actually, I was reminded today of a story in scripture where Jesus is asleep. And there's a massive storm raging on the Sea of Galilee, and the disciples are sailing this boat, and they're terrified fishermen. So, you know, they kind of know what sort of storm to be terrified of. And Jesus is just sleeping in the boat. And they're like, Jesus, like, what are you doing? Do you not give a shit whether we live or die or what's going on here? So, they wake him up and they ask him this, and he goes, really, don't you trust me? And stands up and tells the wind and waves to stop it, and they do. And the disciples are like, who even is this guy? Yeah. So there you go. There's Jesus in a boat.
There's Jesus in a boat. Yeah.
And it's a beautiful metaphor for the tiny little church on the stormy sea of culture. And yeah.
Is there anything else I should know about, you know, Lutheran elections? And
no, I don't think so. No. You need some more curly questions.
Need some more curly questions. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not sure how much
it's,
I can
it's
talk.
It's all pretty orderly.
Yeah, I know, right?
I don't know. Are there questions about what a bishop does?
So you mentioned that a bishop was like the first amongst equals and kind of leads the congregation of pastors. I mean, is there anything else a bishop does that is particularly special? Can they like make decrees and, you know, that kind of stuff? Or
I think in the Catholic Church, to an extent, they do. Mostly cares for a lot of it's firefighting and kind of setting vision and direction and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. There wasn't much.
Yeah, there wasn't much else. Yeah. I do actually have a thing about a time a Christian and a Buddhist walked into a bar.
Excellent. Was there a bishop?
There was a bishop.
Good. That's appropriate.
And they were, you know, and this was a chess bishop.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I can only move diagonally.
And they saw the chess bishop and they said hi to the chess bishop. And they said, how you doing? And they were chatting and they asked the bishop the question. I was like, well, how come you can only move diagonally? Like what is with that? Like, what led to all this? And the bishop was like, oh, well, it's pretty easy, right? Like, you know, north, south, east, and west are all cardinal directions.
It's good. There is this thing of like, I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, like Christian kind of pastors, leaders generally, like needing to be servants. Like the words in Greek are literally like servant is deacon, pastor is shepherd, right? Like that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And so in terms of what bishops are supposed to be doing is that they're supposed to be being Christ-like to the rest of the church in the same way a pastor is supposed to be like Jesus to the people that they're serving there, which means kind of not dominating or whatever else. Do Buddhists have bishops?
So not yes and no. So it depends which type of Buddhism, as in always, you've got your Mahayana Theravada split. So, I mean,
as a Zen Christian, I have a vested interest in
yes. Well, my understanding is that the Mahayanas are a little bit more hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your kind of teachers who've, you know, get what you call like Dharma transmission.
Tibetan Buddhists, Mahayanas, certainly. Yeah. They're a sub-branch.
Sorry, Tibetan Buddhists are Vajrayanas, which is it is a sub-branch of Mahayana, but it's distinct enough to be its own different thing.
Sure.
Yeah. So Tibetan Buddhists, absolutely, right? The Dalai Lama system, we spoke about this before, but it's very hierarchical, is the Catholic Church of Buddhism. Yep. Yeah. So absolutely there are, you know, obviously different names, but effectively, you know, anyone with the title Rinpoche or whatever else is, yeah,
very has a kind of office.
Yeah,
yeah. Like. Yeah.
So yeah, there's officials there. The Mahayanas often do. You know, I think there's certainly a kind of church church maybe is the right word even, a church hierarchy there. You know, certain. I guess it's more of a deference to your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if somebody is your teacher, you defer to them, but then they defer to their teacher. So, like, yep. Essentially, the oldest teacher is often the most kind of esteemed and has that level of authority. I'm not 100% sure if the Zen tradition has, like, an official organizational structure like that. But, yeah, certainly it's existent in the Mahayana tradition in a kind of quite a clearly defined way.
That kind of like that reminds me of the idea of the apostolic succession within Christianity, which goes kind of, well, the apostles kind of appointed the first leaders of the church, and then those leaders appointed leaders, and
right.
et cetera, and so on. So that theoretically, certainly in the Orthodox Church, if you're a priest, you can trace back who appointed you all the way back to an apostle,
right.
And therefore to Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and in the Zen tradition, actually, in the I think it's the Soto Zen tradition, there is a part of every service where they chant the name of their entire lineage from the Buddha to their current teacher.
Yeah, so that's exactly
and it goes like 15 minutes and you're chanting you know, Buddha, then next guy, and it's just this constant kind of thing, right? There is an absolute kind of lineage, ancestral worship kind of approach to it.
Okay, so that's ancestral worship is the aspect of it.
Culturally it is, yeah.
Yeah, okay, because the Christian one, like it's just a sort of tracing of authority.
Yeah, thing. I mean, I think practically and theologically it's probably that. I think I'm calling it ancestral worship because obviously it's linked in with the East Asian practices and you know, there's a lot of kind of traditional ancestor worship that goes on there.
So it kind of it fits in that culture, even if it's not doing the exact same thing.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And then in Theravada, which I know a bit more about, there's certainly a few layers. There's certainly abbots, so there are heads of monasteries.
Yep.
And you know,
which is a pretty basic functioning of human groups,
right?
Thing.
Yeah, and it's probably a little bit more than a pastor, just because they also lead the monks rather than just lead the lay people.
So, how do you become an abbot? Are they elected, or are they appointed by the previous one, or do the abbots get together and say, "Well, we want this guy to be your new abbot"?
It's elected by the monastery community. So I say,
monastics.
So all the so once an abbot steps down, all the monastics in that community will then essentially elect a new abbot.
And so they'll step down. It's not a they could have it for life if they wanted to, but might get tired.
It is a for life position until you choose to relinquish it.
Yeah, okay.
Yes,
which is I think what bishops in the Catholic Church are.
Right,
yeah. But don't quote me on that.
Right, yeah. And I guess in Buddhism you have the very easy mechanism of if anyone like starts to abuse their power or whatever. I was like, in Buddhism, the simplest mechanism is just walk away.
Yeah, leave the monastery.
There's really nothing stopping a monk from leaving a monastery, just starting a different monastery or going to join a different monastery. There are no barriers. Like there are functional barriers. Like you have to normally get your abbot's permission to do that. Yeah. But if you have decided you hate your abbot, like it's not hard to just go and be part of a different monastery.
Do monks form attachments to monasteries? Because I know there's some Christians that even if things are going really badly, they're not going to leave that particular church or that particular denomination.
I mean, most monastics are not enlightened, so of course they have attachments of all kinds. Yeah. So, and it's natural to be attached to the things that are most salient in your life, and if you're a monk, that's probably a monastery. But a lot of the times these days, you know, abbots will step down or whatever else.
Of course.
And then in the Thai tradition, at least, I think in the Sri Lankan as well, there's essentially a kind of unofficial council of abbots, or like a kind of like I don't I've got all the I think I've heard the name in passing, but I've never like stopped to properly consider it. But yeah, like there's what is effectively a council of leaderships in a particular given country.
Yep.
So, you know, I've heard of, for example, people being referred to as the number one monk in Thailand, right?
Okay, yeah.
And like that's the person who's elected. You know, generally it's democratic. Generally it's an elected system. The Buddhists like to claim that they invented democracy.
Lots of people like to claim that they invented democracy. Yeah.
But certainly the Buddhist system was set up to be democratic amongst the monastics. So even if they didn't invent it, they were early adopters.
Sure.
So yeah, the whole system is democratic, and essentially there are, depending on your country, different tiers and layers of positions and that kind of stuff. So yeah, there are certainly monks that are given greater authority. There are monks that are given, like, you know, in Thailand, there's like the monks that like serve the king,
which is all just kind of to the extent that there's institutional structures.
Right.
There are monks with differing levels of positions within those institutional structures.
Right. And you know, as you can expect, that's where the politics comes into it. Yep. So, you know, I've heard a story about, you know, there was these two monks that were like number two monks in Thailand, and they were like both under in consideration to become the number one monk when the number one monk died. And then before the number one monk died, one of them, like, you know, spread rumors and start and got the number one of the two. I said one of the other one was a communist, so got them arrested and put in jail.
Right, fair
being
enough.
Being a communist, so then the number one monk died, and then that guy got to be the head monk, and then the other guy got vindicated, and like, so there's all sorts of political.
That sounds like it's unhealthy for your enlightenment.
Yeah, I think, you know, so what do they say? All power corrupts, right?
And
so,
absolute, you know, power corrupts absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, even amongst the people who you would think are the least likely to be corrupted by that power, it's still a corrupting force.
Well, we've talked about this before. See the monks behaving badly episode.
Monks
and drugs.
Yeah. So it's absolutely a So there are political things that go on in it, and like even in Sri Lanka, I think that the certain levels of the monastics community actually like get involved in actual parliament and things. There's a whole bunch of kind of chaotic political shit that goes on at the top level, but you know, that's what happens throughout all of Asia, no matter who you are or whether or not your religious affiliation is there. It just kind of, you know, it's all associated.
And of course there's no crazy political shenanigans that happen in Australia or other Western countries.
Impossible to hear.
We've never had religious leaders involved in politics in different ways here.
In the slightest.
No. So that's good. I'm glad that we're better than everyone else.
But yeah, I think
that was sarcasm, just for in case anybody didn't pick it up.
I think just to go back a second, the thing that I think makes the Buddhist situation all that little bit different and all that little bit, I guess, more accountable, even if the politics does get out of hand sometimes, is just the ability for all monastics to just opt out. Like there is. You know, the famous thing I've said a few times about Ajahn Brahm getting excommunicated for choosing to ordain women, right? Ajahn Brahm tried to introduce the ordination of women to his kind of, you know, his authority figures in the Council of Thai Monks. They rejected it, and then they kicked him out, and so he just left.
Yes.
And then just started his own kind of little, you know, group of people in Australia that were totally fine with it. So, like, you know, it's like they had pretty much no effect on his life. It was just like, sure, whatever. So yeah, it's not that bad.
Which is, you know, again, and increasingly so, it's a similar thing in the church, right? Like, people can leave, have left, will, like amongst people our age, the willingness of people to jump around between different churches and different denominations and that kind of thing is way higher than it has been, because the historical cultural ties aren't as strong. The different language groups or ethnicities that were associated with different traditions aren't holding in the same way. There's not the same level of ostracism from a community if you're not part of the local church, all of which I think is certainly healthy for not having abuses of power within the system, put it that way.
Yeah. I think also there's a one of the other things I wanted to mention it too is that there's a essentially a global Buddhist kind of conference or global Buddhist congress, and I'm trying to frantically Google the name of it, but I can't find it. But essentially there is a moment when all Buddhists of all denominations all get like all the leaders of the Buddhism of the
Sangha. I was about to ask, could you go to that?
Probably, again.
Could you watch?
Probably as an observer, yeah, yes, but yeah, probably not as a participant, yeah. But I think you have to be part of the Sangha to kind of be in on it.
Yeah, fair.
But yeah, there's essentially a global Buddhist kind of meeting that everyone gets together and kind of, you know, yeah, it's like similar to like what the Council of Nicaea or whatever, it's like that they maybe have some determinations on scripture or translations and that kind of stuff. And yeah, and that happens pretty
kind of
regularly.
Say this is kosher and this is not that,
right,
that kind of thing.
Exactly right. Yep. So yeah. So the Global Buddhism Conference, I think, is maybe what it's called. That is the one that I'm going to say it is, and I'll correct myself later if I'm wrong. But yeah, that was in 2019, and the 12th one was in 2023.
Yep. So they've only had 12.
They're not super frequent. Every five years.
But also, it's a sort of something enabled by modernity, right? And easier travel and
It's I think, you know, the various geographic areas have had it for a while, but like if you've got, you know, 12 in there every, you know, 5 years, then, you know, it's 50 years.
Post-World War II, take away some wars,
kind of thing. Yeah.
Yep.
But
like for a religion, religious tradition that like goes back 3,000 years, that's a relatively recent thing, right?
Yes. Well, and I'm sure that there were historical ones that that did do that. Yeah.
They're not doing the thing where they count back like the like Clive Palmer's political party.
No. I don't know if you've ever seen the flag that's essentially like orange, white, red, blue. There's like a multicolored flag that's got like vertical panels and horizontal panels.
Not ringing a bell.
Anyway, there's a
that's their flag.
That's the flag of the Global Buddhist kind of congress and conference and
cool. Well, do you know who has tons of time for church politics?
Kevin MacLeod.
He certainly does.
He does.
He writes some wonderful music that you hear.
I would elect Kevin MacLeod Bishop.
Don't know if he has time amongst all the music things, but sure.
Yeah.
You can find us at christianbuddhistbar@gmail.com. If there's things you'd like us to ramble about, you can send them there. You can get in touch with us in other ways.
You can nominate Jacob for bishop.
Sure, I'll be bishop of the podcast.
Yeah, okay, you can be bishop of the podcast.
We'll see you next week.